So the Flames win 3 of 4 on this road trip. They score 18 goals in those three wins, 21 goals on their road trip overall. A lot of people pointing out that it must be because they put Lindholm back on the top line, Backlund back with Matthew Tkachuk. That's why this team has exploded offensively. And I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it isn't. I think there's a little confirmation bias there in saying, well, it must be that's the only reason. But it is an interesting conversation. Lindholm at right wing, Lindholm at center. Backlund with Tkachuk, Tkachuk with Lindholm. What is the best look for this Calgary Flames team? How do they stack up the most? And I'll play this clip for you before we get into it. I played this last hour too. Here's Jeff Ward, who talked about it last night. The head coach essentially saying the players came to him, said they'd like to go back to the way things were, and that's exactly what the head coach has done.
You guys just felt like, you know, they needed a little bit more, and Bax wasn't the only player we talked to. We talked to Johnny, we talked to Monty, we talked to a lot of our players over the last couple of weeks and really got a lot of feedback from them, and then decided that this was the direction that we had to move based on what they were saying, and it's paid off. And, you know, I give them a lot of credit for, you know, we talk about, you know, having to have the tough conversation, and for them to come in and bring up, some dicey subjects that maybe in some other areas they wouldn't want to talk about. You know, they come in and had the tough conversation, and we got to listen to the tough conversation too when it's, you know, when it's coming our way, if we expect them to listen to it when we have to give it the other way. So I thought the feedback was excellent. They were honest, and they felt like it could be something that really would help. And right now it has helped us, and it's paying some good dividends for us.
So if I'm reading between the lines, sure does sound like Michael Backlund said, I'd really like to go back to center. And Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan said, we'd really like to have Elias Lindholm back on our right wing. And the coaching staff, the head coach, has listened. And that's the way it looked this entire four-game road trip. It's a really interesting conversation. And I am fascinated to see how this plays out going forward. Is that the best look? Is Lindholm with Monahan and Gaudreau the best look? Or does it make more sense to have Lindholm at center and be a deeper group down the middle? And I think from listening to the coach right there, we're probably talking about what we've seen the last four games get a much longer run, and that's what we'll see for the next little while. But I just think it's a fascinating conversation as to how this team stacks up the best and what their best forward groupings are on any given night.
Well, how are they going to work? I mean, you can point to them switching the lines. You can point to Jeff Ward calling out the character of his team. You can point to the absence of Hamonic. You can point, as a rallying cry, right, as example. You could point to Zach Ronaldo getting reinserted in the lineup. I mean, just because two things happen at the same time does not mean that there's correlation.
That's why I say I think there's a lot of confirmation bias.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, four of the five games, or what should I say, three of the four that they won on the road trip, those are really good efforts. This isn't a team that's outworked their opponents a lot this year. I'm not of the opinion that if they hadn't switched the lines, they wouldn't have won those games. If they get that kind of work ethic, I am not surprised at all that they beat the teams that they beat. And the other thought would be that, I don't know, like, Backlund at center was obviously a better fit. He's almost played no wing in his career, but Lindholm at center was good. And if Lindholm is your most important forward, which I think he is, of course Johnny and Monty are going to be happier with him than without him. But is that the best for you when you're playing a playoff-caliber team in a series? I'm not ready to jump off that bridge yet, because we saw that went last year. How'd it go? Remind me.
Yeah, it didn't go well.
They didn't play well in game one and eked out a win and then got pumped four straight. So don't count me as a converted, this is the best way to roll them, so much as that the season has lots of twists and turns, and at different times you're going to shape shift and things like that.
Well, and you got to get to the playoffs before you can even think about how your team best stacks up in a playoff series. And if this is the way that they can get to a playoff round, if this is the way they can make the playoffs, and if they're going to be better in a regular season with these combinations, or at the very least, if there's a possibility that could be the case, I think you have to look at it if you're Jeff Ward. I still am very much of the opinion that Lindholm's this team's best center.
So if he is that is how is this their best lineup?
I don't believe it is.
Yeah, okay. So there we are.
But if that's...
It doesn't mean it hasn't helped because it's
going to help the team, and if it's going to... Like, I just think it's fascinating to see Jeff Ward have players come to him, say, okay, let's give it a try. I'll listen to you. Let's do this. If this is really going to be something that gets more out of you for a little while here, then I think we have to look at it. Again, I don't necessarily think that it is their best lineup to have the most success when it matters the most in the postseason. However, if it's going to get Johnny Gaudreau going a little bit, if it's going to get Sean Monahan going a little bit, I do think there's some potential rub off there. And I also, you know, you take a look at the opposition that they're playing here. Look at who their next two games are against. Not super deep opposition. You're going up against Chicago. You're going up against Anaheim. Like, you've got an opportunity for that to continue to have some success.
Yep.
And if that can
and you've
help
got last change
spur
at
on some offensive confidence, then maybe there is some merit to doing it. I still believe Lindholm, Monahan, Backlund, Ryan as your four centers, one through four, is the best way this team stacks up. I truly believe that.
Yeah.
But over the next number of weeks, if they go like this and Jeff Ward really believes that this is going to be the best way to get some confidence from his group, I can understand why he's done this.
Yeah, I have no problem with a coach switching lines. We see it all the time. I mean, there's not a lot of teams that set a line and leave it in stone the entire season. There's good reason for that. There's different, you know, strategies when you have last change and when you don't, and versus what type of an opponent you have. This is incredibly normal behavior to switch stuff up around and know that you have some trios that work and other, I guess, repercussions of, well, they put guys here, what happens there? I have no problem with them making the switch, but it's a little heavy to suggest, well, look, this is their best lineup when it's the exact same lineup that Bill Peters was under 500 with for 27 games this year.
Well,
sorry.
And the exact same lineup that had that group fall right off a cliff after the All-Star break last year and really get their faces caved in come the postseason. So I'm not convinced this is their best lineup either, but knowing where they were and knowing how much of a labor it's been for this team to score goals this year, I can understand why the change has been made. And boy, it sure does underline how this team's ideal lineup is lacking one other winger. If you could make one other forward pairing.
So who do you drop out of your top six? As constructed now, Mangiapane?
Yeah, maybe Mangiapane.
He's been really good.
Make yourself a good top nine, or maybe Mangiapane's one of the guys that you can plug in. But I mean, if, because I think Backlund Tkachuk needs to be a pairing, because I think Tkachuk gets the most out of Backlund.
Well, and you're better when Backlund's flying, you know that. The other thing that's probably, like, we all know, but we don't really recognize enough, whatever's going to get Johnny Gaudreau in the best space possible, anything that helps Johnny be an elite producer versus a pedestrian is probably going to have to go right to the top of the list of things you have to consider. And that kind of says two things. A is when he's on, this team is a contender. And he hasn't really been on a lot this year, which kind of explains where they are in the standings. And he really was on through two-thirds of last season, and that kind of explained how last year went. Wasn't on in the playoffs, kind of explained there. So you have to understand that. And so understanding that when he's right, he's an incredibly elite producer, that's one thing. But I guess what it also acknowledges is that when he ain't right, it ain't good at all. And I think we've seen a lot of that this year.
Well, when he's not an offensive impact maker, this team's a pretty pedestrian team offensively. He is their one, and this is not a knock on Tkachuk, who is extremely skilled, and he's tied with Gaudreau for the team lead in points. But, I mean, Gaudreau is their one game-changing offensive talent when he's on.
There's no one else that has a 100-point season in him, and Johnny, I believe, does.
Well, he was a point off from doing it last year.
And how many games did they rest him down the stretch? Like, that wasn't crazy to think he was a 100-point player.
Yeah.
He was flirting around point-per-game status before that season last year. I mean, over the course of his career, there's just how many guys in the NHL are point-per-game players or close to it? There just aren't many. Like, he's an elite, elite guy.
And he's the only guy on the team that can, when he's right, turn a game on its side on one shift. Any given shift, even Johnny Gaudreau can go out there in a game that your team's not playing well in. He can engineer a goal, whether he's scoring it or setting it up. And all of a sudden, a game where maybe your goaltending is holding you in it and you're not playing very well, you've got a 1-0 lead because of one shift from Johnny Gaudreau. We haven't seen that enough this year, but that is the capability that he possesses.
And last night's a perfect example. He had, what, 3 breakaways? And hit the inside of the post on a play where 9 times out of 10 that goes in for Johnny. I mean, he could have had a 4-goal night, and you wouldn't really have been like, yeah, that's not – that'd be crazy. I mean, he's had his issues on breakaways. I think he's overthinking it a bit. But that said, it's just when he's right, he's creating so many offensive opportunities, you're just a way more dangerous team. So if Johnny wants Buddy there, if Johnny's feeling great with Monahan and whoever else, if Johnny wants Lindholm, it kind of feels like the inmate's running the asylum a bit, but – if Johnny Gaudreau is going to be right, that's the most important thing for this team offensively.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, they got to make the playoffs and they've got to be a Pacific Division team, and you don't want to be that number 2 wild card team and have to face St. Louis or Colorado in round 1. All of that is granted.
Nope.
But just assuming for the sake of this conversation, they make the playoffs and match up against Vancouver or match up against Arizona. Mm-hmm. Like, Vegas would be the one difference because they're an extremely deep group of forwards. But when you take a look at who they might match up against in round one, they might not have to go up against a Colorado team that can stack that line, have an elite player like McKinnon, and still be deep up and down their lineup,
right.
Even deeper this year than they were a year ago.
I'd agree the dangerous players are all in the top 6 in Arizona, and Vancouver's got a few elite players, but they're all on 2 lines. I don't think the 3rd and 4th lines blow you away in Vancouver, Arizona, or Edmonton. Vegas, okay, you can convince me there's a little more depth, but there's something wrong there, just not unlike what we've seen here. There's just something off with that group. They've already gone through a coach. They haven't got enough saves. That's going to be something that, again, we can't ignore. We'll talk about that later with all these coaching changes that we've seen this year, now 8. But, look, they might not have to line up their deep lineup versus their front-end loaded lineup in round 1 of the playoffs based on their opponent.
Again, assuming that is where they would finish.
Yeah.
But
a lot of assumptions. That A, they get in, B, they line up against a specific team, and C, that it's not a Vegas club you just mentioned.
And the other interesting thing would be what would happen if they line up against Edmonton, because Edmonton has got, like, if they were just
best line in the NHL, arguably.
If they
stack it.
Exactly. And it would be really interesting to see what would happen and how Jeff Ward would go about his business if that playoff scenario came to pass. Be a scenario where you're so afraid that McDavid and Draisaitl, you know, cave in Monahan, Gaudreau, Lindholm, that you might think about putting Lindholm back to center? I'd be really curious to see how he would look.
Well, and it would totally be what exactly is Edmonton doing? Because right, the last, what, probably since around Christmas or so, that they've had them on separate lines.
Different lines. And they've both been going.
Yeah, and they've been a little more dangerous that way. So I guess, you know, it's all hypothetical land, but hey, look, they've had a decent road trip. They're now, they've what, won what? Three of their last seven.
But also 3 of their last 7.
Right. So it's a nice chunk, but it followed an ugly spell at home, and they went 6-game run with 1 playoff team. They beat that team, and they found a way to lose to 3 others, so I don't know. Like, coming out of that Battle of Alberta, there's kind of a 6-game chunk that I looked at, and I don't know why. It's kind of arbitrary, but following that big emotional game that almost felt like a different category of the season, like, I'll make the analogy to, like, a soccer team where you've got your league play, and then you've got Champions League or Europa or, like, Canadian Championship. Like, it was a game on a different level that felt like it was part of a different schedule. That Battle of Alberta game was not like any other regular season game they would have had against any other team, right? Like, those Battle of Albertas are almost standalone. But coming out of that, they got spanked. You look at their next 6, 5 of 6 in division, 1 of 6 against playoffs, and they go, what, 3-3
Yeah, three wins.
Three losses.
And then the losses to San Jose, Nashville, and Los Angeles. LA. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's we've been riding the roller coaster. It's how can these guys, how could you even trust them? And then, oh, it's another six goals again. I mean, they still have the calling card of inconsistency. You just have no idea what you're getting, but no one's here saying they're not talented enough to win the division, that's for sure.
We're live at Ski Cellar, by the way. Welcome to the program. Pinder and Steinberg is well underway on this Friday afternoon. 5809 McLeod Trail South is where we are. Biggest sale of the year is underway at all three locations of Ski Cellar. Yeah, like we're talking about junior ski wear up to 60% off. Oakley, Spyder, all the best brands in winter sports up to 50% off. How about this? A Head Edge Light 80 ladies ski boots, regularly $439.95 down to $259.95. You're getting, whether it be used, whether it be new stuff, you're getting huge markdowns here at Ski Cellar. Once again, 5809 McLeod Trail South. We're right beside Chinook Center, and you have got something to give away. We've got some lift tickets to give away.
Full-day tickets for Winsport. We've got three pairs we'll give out throughout the afternoon. Let's do our first pair now. Why don't you tell me where the first downhill stop on the Men's World Cup circuit is? Where is that location? First downhill of the year for the men.
You got to come in.
Come in. Bring us the answer. Don't
give
text
us the
it
answer.
In. We are at the McLeod Trail and 58th Avenue location of Ski Cellar. So come on in right to our station back by the ski helmet and tune-up area. Give us the correct answer, and we've got two lift tickets for you for Winsport for the 2019-20 season, which is this winter.
Now, we talked about the Oilers and how the Flames might match up against the Oilers in a playoff series and what that would look like. We touched on, of course, the Oilers have got to get there. They don't have McDavid, and we don't know when McDavid's going to be back. Although
placed on IR officially today.
Yes, and
doesn't really mean anything.
They said that he's going to be out 2 to 3 weeks, so we're about 4 days into that. They played two games without him. And now I don't think I'm going out on a limb suggesting that they're going to be without another top six forward for the next little while. They're without James Neal. They're without Connor McDavid. And now Zach Kassian is going to be missing some time.
I think there's a significant chunk of time here.
I would hope it's a significant chunk of time here after deciding that using his skate as a weapon was the... And again, like you can tell me that that's hyperbole or whatever. And I don't... To be perfectly honest with you, I don't believe that Zach Kassian was trying to stab somebody, but it is his complete and utter lack of any situational awareness and complete dummy face that makes it almost irrelevant whether he was trying to hurt somebody or not.
Your intent does not matter. You can't do that.
The fact that he admitted that he was trying to kick Eric Chernak off of him post-game yesterday is all you need to know. I don't care if he was trying to get free. I don't care if he didn't kick him as hard as he possibly could. The fact of the matter is, you went skate first on purpose into another human being. You can't do that. And Zach Kassian shows us again how he has very little awareness of situations when he starts to see red. When that guy sees red, he makes the most ridiculous decisions. He puts himself, his team, and other people at risk, and here he is again with another really stupid decision made last night.
This is high comedy. I mean, this is just exceptional stuff. Over the course of his career, he's missed 42 games due to suspension. That's 32 for off ice and 10 for on ice, and he had, of course, the entire hockey world captive as his audience for a lecture on what the code is after Matthew Tkachuk hit him legally within the rules of the game and then didn't want to engage in a fight, and Kassian continued to throw punches at his head anyway. We were all sitting in the audience learning about the code, asking questions, figuring out what it meant for a tough guy. What is the real code? Let's get a Kickstarter going. I think we could sell out some stadiums around North America. Zach can tell us why kicking another player with your skate is okay by the code, or the flip side is he could shut up about the code.
Here's the quote from Zach Kassian. Quote, He was holding my leg. It was reactionary. I was just trying to get him off me, kick him off. If I kicked him hard, I think he would have flew back or the ref would have called a penalty. I was trying to get off and pull my leg off. He was holding me and Archie down. I didn't even know where the puck was. I was trying to pull my leg up and get up. It felt like we were there a lifetime. We were down there for a while.
Yeah, that's the explanation of someone that can't figure out what's going on there.
I don't believe that just because you were down on the ice for a long time that all of a sudden you're not wearing skates.
Let's get the list going of what allows you to kick someone in the NHL. Ready? Done.
Yep, there's not a single really
situation
a list that is allowed. Yep.
That will grant you permission. Well, now I don't have the code.
Now does that?
Maybe
now, hold
this
on.
Is a new amendment to the does code that, that Cassian
has
written.
Does that mean
in.
That Eric Chernak now gets to kick him the next time?
We'll find out. I mean, I hope we find out. I would really be sad if Cassian only lectures about the code when other people violate it. But I would think, if I'm guessing, now I'm not an expert here, that maybe Cassian and Chernak get to go to a venue, and we'll get Zach. I don't know whether shoulder pads or not, but we'll put a bullseye on his chest, and Chernak can throw an axe. How does that sound? Not too hard, though. Not hard enough that it would propel him backwards. Yeah, is that the code? Are we good?
His hockey equipment.
I mean, right? I he's the expert on the code. Let's get him in on this. Well,
The thing is that it's not like Cassian was completely off base when he talked about that stuff after the first meeting between the Flames and the Oilers.
He just loses all credibility. That's
exactly. It. It's when, like, what he said then wasn't 100% off base, and it might have rankled and ruffled feathers for Flames fans, and it might have really empowered Oilers fans or whatever, but it's not like he was 100% wrong. But you lose all kinds of credibility, in fact, all credibility, and you paint yourself as nothing but a straight-up hypocrite when then you go do something as ridiculous and gutless as doing that was last night. Like, you don't kick another person with your skate. And I love the Oilers fans and such who are sitting here saying that, well, he was just trying to push him off. He wasn't trying to kick him. There was no intent there. He wasn't trying to hurt him. Doesn't matter.
The lack of
all awareness of what is on your feet and what is happening and the danger and the damage that could have been done by doing that, it mitigates all of that. Doesn't matter. Like, I cannot believe there are human beings who are saying that, well, this isn't as big a deal as people are making it. Zach Cassian, he was the one who was wronged, and you're blowing it way out of proportion, Pinder. This is ridiculous. Cut Cassian some slack here. These are things that are being said right now.
There is no subscript of the NHL rulebook, nor the code, I'm guessing, though Zach can get us up to speed on that, that allows you an unintended light kick of your skate to the chest, which is what he's trying to claim. I'm sorry. And you know what? Like, there's a long-standing reputation here, and good for Zach Cassian for saving his NHL career and turning it around and getting his game to a spot where at least one GM would have given him the contract he just got. But he's always been known as a guy that you wondered if he could, in the heat of battle, make the right decisions. That's just more evidence that he can't. And so now you're without two of your top six forwards if you're an Oiler or an Oilers fan or a member of that organization.
Three of them, if you put Neil in there too.
I don't, but I mean, he did play there at points this year. But it's entirely for one thing, stupidity. That's the only reason they're missing another top six forward. There's no other excuse. There's not a misunderstanding of what's allowed or not. It's stupidity. Everyone that plays this sport knows you cannot kick with your skate. End of story.
So Friedman thinks 8 games is what we're talking about. That's his guess. I don't have a guess as to what this ends up getting him, but it can't be minor.
Repeat offender factor in? He was suspended, within the last 2 months?
Within the last month. Just over the last month.
Did the NHL Department of Player Safety, were they happy with a message sent about keeping other players safe? Or do you think there's maybe a larger repercussion for so recently after, you know, I'll be better, I'm a changed man, or maybe he never claimed that, but that's a factor. That's a real factor.
The two things are so completely different. Like, one, you know what? even afterwards, he said, well, you know what, I'll take the suspension, and that was a message sent, and, you know, you're in the heat of the battle, and I wish we would have won the game. At the very least, you can squint and see that, you know, maybe there's some logic in what Cassian's saying. But this one, they're so completely unrelated. Yes. One was a heat-of-the-moment thing, but you know what, it was part of a rivalry, and okay. This one was just complete and utter stupidity and lack of any awareness of what's going on around him.
And here's the situation the Oilers are in. They're in the thick of a very hot race for seeding in the Pacific, playoff spots in the Pacific. Imagine if this team misses by like 1 to 3 points this year. You pretty much can chalk up a round of playoff revenue off the ledger thanks to, in the fold for the next 4 years, Zach Cassian. The penalty laid against Calgary in that Battle of Alberta number two. And now a significant suspension coming his way is what we're all expecting. When you waive your right to the in-person, we're all bracing for more than five.
Well, in-person never mind, five is
seems to.
Potentially
yes.
in the offing or
and
more.
Never mind the repeat offender status. I mean, if there's a narrow miss of the playoffs, Zach Cassian really is the single biggest reason they missed the playoffs. I know Bob Nicholson went totally crazy and lost his mind and tried to blame Tobias Reeder for that last year, but this year you actually could pin it to one player. We just got to get him to teach the rest of us about this code, though, that he's so fluent on. Embarrassing.
Really, really smart stuff from Zach Cassian last night. I still don't know how he could come away from that trying to justify it, but he is. He's got lots of Oilers backers behind him. We'll see what the NHL Department of Player Safety ends up saying and what type of punishment they end up levying on Zach Cassian. But that was bad last night.